First of all, thank you to Mishpachat Inker, to Yitz specifically this week, whose wife is out of town. So I guess the total thank you goes to you for your house and some of your food. I have to also apologize in advance. I did not have a chance to make myself an outline for this shiur. So I hope that everything will come out orderly and organized in your minds. Please, if it doesn't, please feel free to stop me anywhere along the way and ask and clarify. Again, obviously with the limitations that we have in terms of time. Basically, the structure, I think, is going to be the following. The first part, we'll just do a little bit of a background to the idea of Ma'aser Ksavim and a little bit of just understanding where it comes from in Tzedakah without too many details, just a little bit of a background. Part two, we'll discuss the questions, just some basic issues having to do with Tzedakah and Ma'aser, some basic halachic details. Section three will be the questions of what you can use Ma'aser money to pay for. Which things can you use the master money for, and which things can you not use it for? And section four, how do you calculate how much money that you earn is chayav in ma'aser? Meaning, what can you deduct, and what can you not deduct in terms of calculating the end of the day? This is my sum total from which I need to take my ma'aser money from. Okay, those are going to be our four sections. That outline was just as much for me as it was for you, so I have it clear in my mind as well. Okay. So the first step is trying to understand what exactly is Ma'aser Ksavim, what is it based on, where does it come from, and how severe is the mitzvah or halacha of Ma'aser Ksavim. So certainly, to some extent, Ma'aser Ksavim is based on the halachas of tzedakah. We have a mitzvah of tzedakah in a number of psukim in the Torah, where the Torah says that you have to offer things from yourself, either your money or other things, to help aniyim, to help people that are poor. And again, we won't go into these exact halachas right now because these are more relevant to halachas tzedakah, but the basic halacha is de machsara, that an aniyim that's missing something, you really have to provide for that which he is missing, even if he, some aniyim are used to, let's say before, if they had money and then they lost some of their money, some aniyim are used to getting by with much less. Some aniyim, quote-unquote, may usually get by with much more, and God forbid something happened, they lost their job, and they don't have much money. So according to the halachas of tzedakah, you'd be obligated to give the aniyim de machsar, or whatever they're used to, that's what you have to have given, whether either it's more or less. That's halacha within Hilchos Tzedakah. Another halacha within Hilchos Tzedakah that the Shulchan Aruch discusses, which is very relevant to Ma'aser here, which again, we're not going to get into all the details here, but basically, the halacha is that the basic amount for ma'aser is, or for tzedakah, I guess, is a question. How much is it? So the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Mem Tes, and I apologize, a lot of this stuff did not get on the source sheet here, so a lot of it's going to be outside, and then a couple things we'll do inside. See, actually, I'm sorry, it is on the source sheet. Take a look at source number four. This is the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Mem Tes. The Shulchan Aruch says, Shiur Nesinasa, what is the shiur of giving tzedakah? This is now a halacha of tzedakah. Im yado maseges, if he's able to achieve this much, yitzin kifitzorech ha'aniyim, then you should give as much as the aniyim need. If you know a few aniyim and each of them needs a certain amount, ideally, you should give the amount of money that the aniyim require. Im ein yado maseges kolkach, and if you don't have so much money, either because your assets are not tremendous, or because there are too many aniyim that you know about that are legitimately need, and that's one issue we will not discuss tonight. How do you decide who to give money to and who's a legitimate need and who's not? That we are not going to do tonight. But that is definitely a serious question. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Yitain al chomish nechasav. Then you should give up till, Yitain al chomish nechasav, mitzvah and mufchar, vechad me'asar, mirabeirunis, pachos mikan ayin ra. So basically, if you don't have enough to give the aniyim everything that they need, so then these are the following are the standards. Standard number one. If you have enough to give up to one-fifth of your property, of your assets, then you should give up to one-fifth of your assets. That's mitzvah min mufkar. That is the best type of the ideal choice mitzvah, if possible. The echad me'asar is mito beirinus. If you give one-tenth, 10%, that is mito beirinus. That's the average. Pachos mikan, less than that, is ayin ra. That's considered to be a little bit on the stingy side. And then, the next part we're going to leave for the ma'aser discussion. Then he discusses what exactly does it mean, a chomish, a one-fifth. That we will discuss in a few minutes. And then just skip to the next line where it says Haga, the Ramah adds Va'al yivazbez alam yosur michomish, based on the Gemara and Ksubos, that one should not be mivazbez his money more than a fifth, meaning he shouldn't spend or waste his money to spend more than 1/5, 20% on tzedakah shalitz tarich lebriyo, so that he should not require other people to help him out because he spent too much of his money on tzedakah. Correct, correct.
I'm allowed to, it's not that, don't waste more than 1/5.
Yes, there may be, it might be an issue of just being foolish or not not using your money wisely, but the Gemara that's talking about Al Yivazbeis Adam Yosher Mi'chomesh refers specifically to tzedakah. And that Gemara itself, we're not going to get into this now, is a bit of a question. Is that Gemara just giving you good advice? Is that Gemara giving you an isser? It's actually prohibited to use more than that money? What happens if you're very, very wealthy, Baruch Hashem? You have, $20 million. Can you give, can you give $4 million? So that's a question.
We don't say the same thing by other mitzvahs?
We actually do in many situations. Same halacha will apply also in other mitzvahs. In this context, we're going to assume that, and the post can basically spell this out, that tzedakah is similar to most examples of mitzvahs aseh. Mm-hmm. That most mitzvahs say also we pass. And this you can find, where is it? It's in Hilchos Lulav, I believe, in Tavrish and Bav, I think. When it comes to the halacha of how much do you spend on lulav and esrog, so there I think it's the Ramah quotes from other Rishonim that are also based on this Gemara, that you shouldn't spend more than 20% of your money on a mitzvah saseh. But again, there are questions. Does that mean that you're not allowed to? Does it mean if you have a lot of money, maybe you're an exception? That's a discussion we're not going to have now, and there is room to be, if you want to give more than that, there may be room in certain situations to allow it. There's plenty of interesting discussions in the Achron about exactly what the parameters are of this halacha, but that's basically just a basic idea for Hilchos Tzedakah. Okay, good. Those are just some basic ideas that we need from Hilchos Tzedakah to get our bearings here. The rest of Hilchos Tzedakah we are not going to get into tonight. There are a lot of details when it comes to Tzedakah, which we don't have time for. Okay, from there, now let's move on to the question of Ma'aser. So where exactly does Ma'aser Kesafim fit into all this? This whole discussion in the Shulchan Aruch here in Yerodea seems to be about the general obligation to give tzedakah when you have aniyim, when you have poor people that need money. How much of your own money do you have to give, etc., etc.? There's another halacha that we know about from the halachas of Trumos and Masros, and that's the halacha of Maaser Ani. That is the halacha that that you give certain years, third year and the sixth year, instead of giving Maaser Sheni, which is the part of your produce that you bring to Yerushalayim. So instead, you give Maaser Ani. Instead, you give the same amount of the tenth of your produce that is left at that point. After you've given your Truma and your Maaser Rishon, you give a tenth of the remaining produce to the Aniyim. So that's called Maaser Ani. And Maaser Kesafim that we have today, Maaser Kesafim, maybe, again, this is a bit of a discussion, but it may be some sort of a hybrid of both elements. There are some basis for Maaser Kesafim from halachos of Maaser Ani, and some of the Achronim that discuss Maaser Kesafim actually discuss it in the halachos of Maaser in Yoredea, not in Reish Mem Tes, but in Shin Lamed Aleph. That's the siman of Trumos and Maaseros. And there, when they go through the halachos of Maaser Ani, a number of the Achronim discuss the question of Maaser Kesafim. And there, as we mentioned already till now, there will be elements from the halachos of Tzedakah as well, as maybe we'll point out along the way. Okay, so with that background, just very, very, very general background that we've just given. So where does the halacha of Maaser Kesafim come from? What is it? Does the Shulchan Aruch here, when it's talking about the different measurements, does that refer to Maaser Kesafim? Does Maaser Ani refer to Maaser Kesafim? The answer is probably not. Probably not. Maaser Ani refers to produce. Maaser Kesafim refers to money. So that's obviously not the same thing. When it comes to tzedakah, everything we mentioned until now was not a set obligation to give 1/10 of your money every single year. It was an obligation based on the needs of aniyim. If you have aniyim, you should give them money. If you have a lot of aniyim, then ideally you should give them, if you're up to it, 20% of your assets. If you can't, if you're average, you give them 10%, etc., etc., etc. But that's not a specific halacha having to do with every year or every whatever it is, you give constantly 10% of the money that you earn. That appears to be a separate halacha. And the question is, where does it come from? So there are a few answers to this question, and each of them obviously is going to determine the level of the chiyuv of Maaser Kesafim being slightly different. Answer number one, let's look at the sources, the first two sources on the source sheet here. The Gemara in Tanis, a very famous Gemara, says as follows, on Daf Tesamad Aleph, Aser ta Aser, as the Torah says in Sefer Dvarim, you shall surely tithe your produce. So the Gemara says, Aser bishvil shetis asher. Obviously a play on words, because Aser and tit asher from Osher are the same letters, even though one is with a shin and one is with a sin. But the idea is that if you give your tithes, if you give your money or your produce in the proper manner, then Hashem promises you that that you will be able to become rich. Now, again, we're not going to go into all the details now, but this is actually one of the halachas where Chazal say, and this is actually quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that this is one case where you're actually allowed to test HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you can give him a test and say, Hashem, you promised me that I'm going to get rich if I tithe properly. I'm testing you. I want to see whether you come through or not. That you find in the Shulchan Aruch a little bit later, or maybe it's in the Achronim here. It's in... Yeah, in the Ramah in Siman Resh Mem Zayin, the Ramah quotes this, in Siman Resh Mem Zayin Siv Dalet, the Ramah quotes that this is one of the cases where you're allowed to test HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's in terms of produce. When it comes to Maser Ksafim, which again we haven't gotten to the source yet, but when it comes to Maser Ksafim, there is a machlokus in the Achronim, or in terms of Maser Ksafim or Tzedakah, there's a machlokus in the Achronim whether it's subject to the same heter that you're allowed to test Hashem also. Maybe testing Hashem is only allowed when it comes to produce, or maybe testing Hashem also is allowed when it comes to Maser Ksafim or to Tzedakah, to giving money. That's a machlokus in the Achronim that you can find in the Ramah and Pesachei Tshuva, another Achronim in Siman Resh Mem Zayin. Okay, let's look at Tosfos now, at source number two. Tosfos says, Aser Ta'aser, Hachi Isa B'Sifri. The following is what appears in the Sifri, in the Medrash in Vayikra. Aser Ta'aser as Kol Tfuas Zarecha, Hayotzei Hasadeh Shana Shana. You should surely tithe your produce, that Kol Tfuas Zarecha, all of your produce, that comes out from the fields every single year. Ein Li Ela Tfuas Zarecha, Shechayev Maaser. I only know from here that Tua Zarecha, that the grain, your produce is Chayav Maaser. Ribis Prakmatia V'chol Sharavacha Minayin. How do I know that you also have to give Maaser from Ribis, from interest, not interest, which is Aser here, but for this case, let's assume for now we're talking about Ribis that comes from a non-Jew, which you're allowed to take. Ribis coming from a Jew is a bit of a different story, and we're not going to get into that tonight, but that's a bit of a question, whether what you do with that. Prakmatia, any type of selling and business and capital and things like that. The Chol Sha'ar Vacham, anything else that you earn, how do you know that the halachas of Maser apply, that you have to give one-tenth? Tamula or es-kol, right? Es-kol tuas arecha, so es-kol are inclusive words. To have a matzi lemir or es-tuascha. It could have just said es-tuascha, your grain. Why does it say es-kol tuascha, all of your grain? My kol rabos ribis v'prakmatia v'chol davar shemar v'yachbo. That tells you that included in the chiyuv of Maser are all the things that you earn money from. That is Tosfos in Tanis based on the Sifri. It would appear based on this, and this is what many poskim say based on this source, that this source indicates that Maser Ksafim is actually Doraisa. Okay, that's presumably, though not definitely, but presumably the implication of the Sifri here. There are other Achronim as well that say that Maser Ksafim really is not Doraisa, but rather Maser Ksafim is only Drabanan. I forget exactly who they are, but I think it's the Maharil and a number of other Rishonim that say that Maser Ksafim is a chiyuv, but is only midrabanan. That would be, let's just take a look here in this sefer. Yeah, the Maharil, the Taz, and a couple other achronim that seem to hold that way. Just if you're ever interested in terms of the svar that I've been using here, so one sefer that I have here is called Hilchos Maser Ksafim in Hebrew. Very nice summary of a lot of the halachos having to do with Maser Ksafim by Rav Bronstein in Yerushalayim. That's number one. And the other one in English, which is also an excellent sefer in English, is called The Laws of Tzedakah and Maser by Rabbi Shimon Taub. His father is Rabbi Baruch Taub. Any of you who know the Toronto community, his father is the Rav of the one of the big shuls in Toronto. So this is his son, who's also a big Talmud Chacham. So he wrote a whole sefer just on Tzedakah and Maser in English, which is also very, very good. There's other sefer in Hebrew also called that are relevant to this topic. These are the two that I use the most. There's another one called Tzedakah U'Mishpat, which is a nice sefer. All these farm have a lot of the summaries of a lot of the halachas with some footnotes on relating to tzedakah and maser. The third approach, and this is the most interesting one, the third approach is that maser ksafim is not zoraisa and it's not zorabanan. What would you think it is?
Good.
Very good, Chaim. It's basically, according to these poskim, it's basically a minhag. The Bach in Siman Shin Lamed Aleph is the first one, I think, to actually come and spell this out. If you look at source number three, the Aruch HaShulchan sort of says this, though he doesn't quite say it straight. But what he says here, again, I put you here in the middle of the paragraph, here in the Aruch HaShulchan, and so in Reish Mem Tes, he says, L'fi Mashe Be'Ra'anu, based on what he said in the previous paragraph, Hadavar Mukhri says, it's clear, Kedas HaGedolim, that we follow the opinion of those Gedolim, HaSovrim Demaster Ksofim Eilam Shum Ikar Minat Torah, has no basis from the Torah at all. And then he quotes from that, he quotes the Bach and the Tshuvas Pnei Yehoshua, which, again, I can tell you now, they do not hold that it's Durabanan. Again, from the Aruch HaShulchan's language, you could have said maybe he means that there's no Ikar Minat Torah, but it's still Durabanan. But the Pnei Yehoshua and the Bach appear to hold that it's not even Durabanan, it's rather a Minhag. Meaning there's no chiyuv in the Gemara in Chazal for Maser Kesafim specifically. There's no chiyuv in the Torah. That's the first opinion of the Bach. And then the Reich HaShulchan quotes the Taz, who seems to say what we mentioned before, that maybe you actually could say from some of the sources that we saw that really Maser Kesafim is Minat Torah. But the Bach and a number of other Achronim, the majority of Achronim, actually hold that the chiyuv of Maser Kesafim is only a minhag. It's a minhag, which is a very, very nice minhag, a very appropriate minhag to keep. But at the end of the day, it's only a minhag which people accept upon themselves, but is not in an absolute obligation. Just the other, just one or two of the other names here of people that hold Maser Kesafim is a minhag are, let's see here. He says they are, let's see here. All right, I'm having difficulty finding this here. It's here somewhere. But I think there's Shvus Yaakov. There's also the... Here we go. He says that the Bach, the Shvus Yaakov, the Chavos Yair, they understand that the Aruch HaShulchan agrees with that as well, which we just saw, though you could disagree. The Chasam Sofer, a lot of Achronim. Seem to assume that really it's only a minhag, and halacha l'masa, so this appears to be the approach that most of the posts can take. Now the bottom line is that it's only a minhag. What we have to see is exactly how that's going to play itself out in terms of the halachas. The reason why it's not so clear that even though it's only a minhag, maybe you could be more makil in certain areas is because we often say, and this you can find in the halachas of neder, in the Shulchan Aruch and Yoradeh Asim and Reish Yudalad, that often if you have a minhag, what we call a minhag tov, something which you do which is a proper custom, and you do it three times, then, or even if you are makabel upon yourself intentionally to do it even one time, it could be that that minhag actually takes on the status of a neder, of a vow, and that would make the obligation much more severe than it would have been otherwise. So just another point in passing as we go, but a very, very important point. Those of you who have, or who do, or didn't realize, but would now take upon yourself the minhag of Maser Kesafim, the way that we've described it, ideally you should just make sure that when you take it upon yourself or that you have, that ideally you take it on as a bli neder, not as a neder. And basically when you do Maser Kesafim, when you fulfill the mitzvah, so you have your mind, or even verbalize, ideally you should really verbalize it, that you're not doing it as a neder, you're doing it as a minhag, which is bli neder. And therefore, if somewhere along the way you have to stop, or you can't do it, or you didn't do it properly, so you have not violated a neder in a way that which might come out if you didn't say that. If you've already accepted upon yourself the chiyuv of Maser Kesafim, because you didn't realize that maybe it's only a minhag, so many of the poskim say that in this situation it's allowed, based on the halachos of Hataras Nedarim, that you do not have to do Hataras Nedarim. In this case, you can simply continue as you were, but have in mind or spell out that basically your acceptance of the minhag of Maser Kesafim is bli neder. It's not being done as a neder or as a minhag three times absolutely. You're doing it as a minhag that when you're able to do it, you try to do it, but not as an absolute obligation based on neder. Second, that's another discussion of the post-game having, and we're not going to get into this now, but so the Achronim have, and if you want to look inside, a lot of these farm all have sources and footnotes about that question. It could be that the Hataras Nedarim that you do on Rosh Hashanah also may work. The problem is that Hataras Nedarim on Rosh Hashanah, Erev Rosh Hashanah, is not so clear that it actually works if you know what you've done. What you'd have to do in order to make it work is basically spell out before you make the Hatara, say that when I make my Hataras Nedarim, please have in mind that I'm asking you judges, whoever the judges are, that I realize that I need to stop my Maser Kesafim, or at least stop the absoluteness of the Maser Kesafim for various reasons, whatever that might be, and then you can recite the rest of the Hataras Nedarim. But it's questionable whether the actual Nusach, the general Nusach of Hataras Nedarim, is valid if you know there's something specific which you need to be Mater that you didn't mention.
But did you say that even if you've been doing it already for a while?
Right. Correct. So the halacha is generally, if you do a neder b'taos, if you made a neder and it was based on a faulty assumption, halacha is you're not required to do Hataras Nedarim. Say again?
What's the faulty assumption? Because you thought that was a mitzvah, the right?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, if you felt that neder Maser Kesafim is an absolute chiyuv, and now you found out that it's only a minhag according to most poskim, then you could say, well, now do I have to do Hataras Nedarim if I want to stop it or if I want to cut it down? So the answer is you probably don't need to do that. You just need to stipulate that from now on, your obligation, you're taking upon yourself, continuing hopefully, to take upon yourself Maser Kesafim, is done in the spirit of bli neder. That it's not being done as an absolute obligation. It's being done that when you're able to do it, and as long as you remember and do it properly, that's what you do. But if for some reason you can't do it properly, then you're not going to be, you know, chayav b'midei shamai or anything like that. Okay. Good so far? That was basically all the basic important hagdama to the halachas of Maser Kesafim. All right. What other important things do we need to know about my 6-7? So there's a lot of important halachas when it comes to Ma'aser K'safim, and because it's not spelled out in the Shulchan Aruch and in the Rishonim, because it's only a minhag that seems to have come later, so a lot of the details are a little bit unclear about exactly what the story is when it comes to Ma'aser K'safim. Let me just give you two basic rules, and then we'll go through the details of the sections 3 and 4 that I mentioned previously. Principle number one is that Ma'aser K'safim, exactly as it says in the Sifri, Ma'aser K'safim only is obligated on things that are what's called revach. It's only based on earnings, based on wages. And that's straight from, this is how basically all the Achronim accept, that it's directly based on the Sifri we saw before, even though that's Doraisim, but the obligation basically is still there, and we'll see this along the way as well. It's all based on Davar Shemar Viach, though, things that you earn, okay? Things that you don't earn, or profit that comes from other avenues which are not actual earning, so the halachas that you don't usually have to take maser from them. So I'll give you a couple examples that he mentions here. Second,
absolute overall earning.
I'll explain to you what I mean. What I mean by earning doesn't mean only that you make it a job. Earning means any money that you get, any actual money that you get from somewhere. That could include money from your job. It could include a yerusha. It could include an inheritance. It could include a gift. It could include money that you found. All these kinds of things are things that you have received, that you have gotten, that would indeed be chayav maser. Say again?
So what's the case of money?
So the case is where it's not money, right. So the answer is, basically, for example, if you have stocks that went up in value, okay, but they're still stocks, so do you have to give maser on that?
Exactly.
So that's the point. That's not considered to be earnings until you actually have the actual money. Until you actually take out the money, there's no, say again?
It's profit, not earnings.
Okay, good, fine. So we'll call it profit then. Yeah. Right, that's not considered to be something which is chayav maser until you take out the money.
So what about your house?
So it's the same thing. That until, according to most poskim, again, most of these issues are not going to be absolutely clear, but most poskim seem to say that when it comes to your house, you're not chayav to pay maser from your house until you actually sell it, until there's actual money coming in. I mean, if you own a house and the value of your house goes up over 2 years, he calls it, he's talking about inflation here. But any of these kinds of things, basically, if there's no actual money involved, it's not, the post can say that it's not a problem, it's not, you're not chayav in maser because that's not actual harvacha. You're not actually earning real money at this point.
Someone gives you a house?
So that's a good question. So again, that's a machlokas poskim. Second?
You win a house.
So these are also questions that the post can discuss. There's actually a big machlokas. I forgot who says what here.
No, that's a real question, because if like you win an asset which is like a non-liquid asset, you know, the house is worth $1 million, do you have to somewhere find $100,000 if you have to sell the price?
Right. Good.
A lot of problems in the States, not with the miser, but with tax issues. When people win these prizes on game shows, a lot of times they'll give back a prize because they can't afford the tax implications.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's a real issue. You get $1 million, not the dollars, but you get like a house, you get a car. And then the guy goes,
all these prizes are tax free.
Yeah, it's not in England as well.
Really?
There's no tax free yet.
We'll talk about taxes, right?
I
didn't
have the opportunity to explore it.
I actually know somebody.
Not only that, when you win the lottery, you don't pay taxes on what you buy with money.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a first thing.
Let's say you win the lottery, you don't know. I wish.
What do you mean?
Like, let's say you win the lottery.
Okay. We'll get that after. You'll give us tips on how to win the lottery after this year. That'll be part two tonight after this year. How to win the lottery. I actually know somebody who won the, who was it? Oh, no, it was a guy from Vaseret, actually, a couple years ago, who won. He won a showcase showdown on The Price is Right in Los Angeles. A trip to Alaska and a new car. And the trip to Alaska, I think he actually returned. He gave it back and he got something else instead. Maybe the car, I think he took. I don't know what to do with the master. I'm not sure. Yeah. Anyway, so there's a machlokas poskim what to do if you receive a gift which is not money. If it's a gift of money, generally speaking, the assumption is that you have to give master. If it's a gift which is not money, so there's a machlokas what to do. Some poskim say, and he quotes this here from the Rabbeinu Yonah in Sefer HaYura, wants to say that you actually should give maser on everything, and apparently Shlomo Zalman Orbach felt that this was the correct psak. Other poskim say, no, it's not money, so you don't have to give maser in it. That's quoted in the other sefer called Stukah Mishpat. Rabbi Taub here quotes both opinions. The general minhag, which he mentions here, and I think also I've heard elsewhere, is that the general minhag is not that you do not have to separate maaser on gifts which are not actual money themselves.
What about gifts of money for specific purposes? I think we were told that gifts were like when your parents give you money saying we want you to spend this on your down payment.
Good question.
We don't want you to get money around. We want you to spend this.
Good question. So I was going to come back to that later, but now that you mentioned now. I'll mention now in case I forget. No, it's fine. I'll just mention it now just in case I forget later. Most of the posts I'm saying, this will go back to some of the issues afterwards, which we'll discuss in terms of how do you figure out what's, you know, which things you can archive in Meiser, and what can you use Meiser money for. But the basic rule here is that anything that somebody gives you with the express intention, the express stipulation that you must use that money for a specific purpose, halacha is that you don't have to give maaser from that money, and you probably should not give maaser from that money because it's being given to you specifically to do for purpose X, whatever that purpose might be, buy a house, to support your family while you sit and learn in kolo, whatever the case might be. So in that case, that money is not chayev and should not, the maaser should not be taken from that according to most poskim, because it was given to you with the on the condition that you do something specific with it.
You could probably argue it's almost not even your money.
Yeah, so I mean, that would basically be the thing, that they give you the money, and they're only allowing you to use the money for something specific. So if they give you that t'nai, so then basically we say that t'nai is valid, and you would not be allowed to do it. I can just take the sources here. This is also based on Shlomo Zalman Orbach in one of the Kol HaTorahs, a nice journal that comes out, I think, from Europe. So he quotes here from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. There are other, I think I saw other shitas also basically agree with this. That's pretty much the standard approach, that that you should not do that if they tell you specifically to not give maaser from it. Okay, if they don't tell you what to do with it, then you probably would have to take maaser, if they don't make stipulations like that. Okay, very good. Let's go on here. All right, next question. So how do we decide what you're allowed to use your maaser money for? Okay, that's now we're into section 3 here. Which things are considered to be valid uses for maaser money? What is the point of giving maaser money in the first place? So the answer here is going to be, the following. The answer here is going to be that ideally, this is based on the Ramah, also in Hilchos Tzedakah. In terms of Halachas of Tzedakah, I forgot exactly where it is, but in one of these simonim here, the Ramah basically says that the main priority of tzedakah, and certainly of maaser, according to many of the achronim, is that it's supposed to be given A, to aniyim, to people that are poor that need money, and B, the other main thing that the achronim say today that you should use it for is for limud haTorah, meaning for yeshivas or for other people's or other people that they can you give them tuition money so they can go learn Torah. We'll come back to your children in a few minutes. That's a very important question. That may be different, but so the basic idea of giving money for people's limud haTorah is another very, very important idea, and that's essentially lechatchila what we usually say. Those are the two basic things that you're supposed to use for your maaser money. I'm just looking for the source here. But let's see right now. So basically, it's in the Ramah somewhere in Hilchos Tzedakah. Say again? Where does it say it there? Say again? The last line? We didn't. No. That's that might be different. We'll get to that in just a minute. That's part of the question here of using maaser money for mitzvah purposes. But right now, in terms of just the basic idea of why you do it or where it's supposed to go for, so that's the basic idea. Say again? Good. So when it comes to donating to a shul, the answer is going to be that it depends. What'd you say? Obviously, right? Obviously. It depends what your donation is based on. And this is, okay, we'll get to this in just a minute. This is in question number one. There are a lot of scenarios here that that we have that will go into this. But that's the basic idea, okay, for Limud haTorah and for Aniyim. Now, there's a whole system of Kadima. Here it is. Okay, I found it. Finally found it now. Okay, so we have quotes here from a number of Makoros. From the Knesset HaGadola, one of the Achronim on Yeradea. So he says, he mentions Limud haTorah, the Chafetz Chaim, and his Sefer Avas Chesed, a very important Sefer also on this topic. So he also mentions the idea of Aniyim and learning Torah. It's based on it's based on a Medrash in Parshas Re'eh that mentions specifically learning Torah. There are a number of other sources also that that they bring here. Okay. Now, that being said, So what else, what are the specifics or the details of what you can use maaser money on? So let me give you the klal first, and then we'll deal with some of the details, okay? Actually, we'll give two klalim. Klal number one. Klal number one is you are not allowed, based on the Ramah we said before, we'll read it inside now, the end of source number four. Ve'ein lasos mimaser shelo davar mitzvah. You're not allowed to use your maaser money for doing a davar mitzvah. Kegon neiros leves haknesses o sha'ar davar mitzvah. Raki tenenu la'aniyim. You have to give us that name. You can't use your maaser money for a davar mitzvah, such as candles for the Beis HaKnesses or other kinds of divrei mitzvah. Now we'll come back to this in just a minute, but the basic rule, let me just give you the basic rule. First, in the Acharon discusses, this is based on, as you see here, the Maharil in Ilchos Rosh Hashanah. There is some discussion in the later Acharon about this as well. The Shach and the Taz have a whole big debate about exactly what the parameters are here. But the rule is basically that if you have a mitzvah, such as, let's say, the basic rule first, let's say buying a lulav and esrog, or a shofar, or a tefillin, or any of these kinds of mitzvahs, the basic rule is that you're not supposed to use maaser money in order to fulfill these mitzvahs. These mitzvahs are things which you have an obligation to fulfill the mitzvah, and maaser shouldn't be confused with the amount of money given to fulfill the mitzvah. Now let me just make one more point, and then I'll let you ask. There might be a question. Well, let's say that your esrog was $50, but really it could have been $20. You chose to get the more expensive esrog. So there's a few details here also. L'chadchila, most poskim say that that's also not the best idea to do that. It's ideal not to do that either, but there may be room to do that if you want. The only possible way to be lenient in that situation is for somebody, again, this is a discussion in the poskim, but this is the bottom line, and you can take a look at the Shach and the Taz in your day on this Ramah here, on Siman Reish Mem Tes, and a number of the Achronim there. But the bottom line is basically that anybody who stipulated at the beginning of their obligation to take maaser, when they said, I'm going to give maaser, if they stipulated that I want to use my maaser money on occasion for divrei mitzvah, at least for hiter mitzvah, again, not for actual mitzvahs, but for hiter mitzvah, that would be allowed. If you hadn't done that, then basically you would not be allowed to use your maaser money for even hiter purposes. And again, l'chadchila, it's better to not allow that. There's another machlokas, whether you're allowed to use maaser money for a mitzvah which is not an obligatory mitzvah. So the examples that are given in the postgame are, let's say, to be a sandik at a bris. What are the other examples? That's in the Shach there in Yerodea. Here also, there are a number of other examples like that, which are basically a mitzvah. And I would have thought that the case of the nair of the candle in the Beis HaKnesses also is included in this, but apparently that's not so pashut. But other cases where, let's say, something which is not a chiyu, but it's a nice mitzvah to get a certain kind of kibbutz. Let's say you want to buy an aliyah or something like that. Same idea. So the halacha here also is, it's actually a machlokas, whether you can use maaser money for that type of mitzvah. And again, the details here also are going to depend on, did you have in mind to begin with when you accepted upon yourself the obligation of maaser, did you have in mind that these things are going to be included or not? Certainly, if the money is going to go to somebody who's an ani, though, if the person is poor that you're giving the money to in any of these kind of situations, then it will be mutter. The other point that we'll just mention here, this is the second major yisod, and then we can get to the detailed questions. The second major yisod is that you're not allowed to use maaser money to pay for things which we'll call debts, poreach chovo. Okay, this is based on this halach actually comes from maaser ani. If you take a look again, it's not on the source sheet. I apologize, but the Beis Yosef in Siman Shin Lamed Aleph in Yoredei and Hilchos Maaser Ani. Halacha of Maaser Ani, based on, I think it's Yerushalmi or a Tosefta or something, that for Maaser Ani, you cannot use Maaser Ani produce to pay back a debt that you have to somebody else. Based on that, and there's also another halacha, which I forgot where it's based on. Rav Moshe actually quotes it from a Gemara in Gittin. There's a Gemara in Gittin, the Daf Mem Dalad, which has a situation where basically the Gemara says that you're not allowed to do something similar. You're not allowed to be Poreach Chov from Maaser. And the way Rav Moshe reads that is, we'll see it in source number six. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. We'll come back to that. Basically, that also is another source that the post can use to support this idea. Based on that, the bottom line is that anything which you are obligated to give to somebody else, you are not allowed to use for use maaser money for. What does that mean? Number one, it means certainly a loan. Number two, it means anything that you have told somebody else, you have what we call given a hischaibus. You have obligated yourself to give money to any specific person. It could be your children. It could be somebody else. Any case like that, the general halacha, according to most poskim, is that you're not allowed to use maaser money for that type of hischayos, or that kind of debt. So now, let's go into the actual, to the detailed questions here, and then if you have more questions, you can ask. You want to wait till we do the cases, or you want to ask now?
No, regarding landing. One of the mitzvahs which has got to do with landing is tying the sefer Torah.
Did you say buying a sefer Torah, or?
But you have a chiyuv to buy a sefer Torah.
Okay.
According to the Rosh, the inyan of the chiyuv is
right.
For landing in it. The sefer Torah is going to be used for landing, which includes landing.
Right.
So, can you use maser money for buying a sefer?
That's an excellent question. So I didn't see this discussion directly in here, but what I would say based on what we've discussed so far is the following. According to the Rosh, and we're not going to get into this now, basically the Rosh holds, as David said, well, let's start this way. The Gemara says that there's a chiyuv, there's a mitzvah, or even a chiyuv to write a sefer Torah for yourself. That's based on the pasuk in where it is Hazinu. Vayelech. Hatakisvu lachem es hashira hazos. You should write down this shira, and the pasuk pshat is that refers to the song of Hazinu in the Torah, but the halacha that the Gemara says that refers to writing a sefer Torah. Every single person has a mitzvah to write a sefer Torah. According to that halacha, and the way that that's quoted in the poskim, you indeed would probably say that you can't use that's a mitzvah. The same way you said before that you can't use maser money for a mitzvah. Now I did forget to mention one point before, and I thank you for jogging my memory. The Achronim do say, and this is also in the Shach and the Taz there, that if you can't fulfill the mitzvah otherwise, meaning there would be no way that you could fulfill the mitzvah without using maser money, then b'diavad you would be allowed to use maser money to fulfill the mitzvah. I forgot to mention that's a very important point, and that could apply also for helping for the Sefer Torah case if you want to spend a lot of money.
And it'll still be counted as
yes, yeah, yeah. In that case, absolutely.
Even
if
it took you like 50 years to save up, Sefer Torahs aren't cheap usually.
100%. So that's why I think that would be a good example of that case, that if you hold like the postcom that said that you have an obligation today to write a Sefer Torah, then we would say that if you can't fulfill that mitzvah with any other money that you have because it's too expensive, then absolutely you would be allowed to use maser money to help to defray the costs. Yeah.
Does it make a difference? So two things. One of the things that you mentioned was around the answer, so kid or mitzvah. Can you use, I didn't quite get the outcome of that, so can you use your maser money for the kid or element of the mitzvah?
So the answer is, l'chadchila, the answer is no. Rabbi Taub here and the master stuff and Saber have some chorus to back that up. But the evidence, what they say is, if you want, what you could do is if you stipulated when you originally made your acceptance of the chiyuv of master, if you stipulated that when I need to, I agree that I'm going to use my master money for extra, hidur mitzvah type purposes, then it would be allowed.
Then you can do anything if you stipulate. I'm going to stipulate my idea to get master, but use it for mitzvahs themselves. That's okay.
No, so that's not okay. A mitzvah chiyuvis is not okay to stipulate that you can give your master money for.
It's only a
day
there. I mean,
second?
It's only a kabbalah that I'm taking on for myself. Can I change the rules how I want?
No. The answer is, yes, but no. The answer is you're allowed to change your rules, but the problem is that you can't change the rules when it comes to a mitzvah chiyuvis. This is the category that we're talking about now, but pareah chovo. Anything which you have an obligation to give, you cannot use maser money, meaning money which has already been separated to be used for maser. That money cannot be used to, or money that you're saying is going to be your maser money, you can't use that money to fulfill or to pay back a debt that you have. Now, in this case, a debt includes a mitzvah that you're obligated to do. Now, if you could get the $20 esrog and you choose to buy the $50 esrog, then already that's what we're saying, there's room for extra stipulations, or if you add in that I'm allowing it or not allowing it, that would be okay. Yeah.
The second is, does it make a difference if the thing that you're spending the money on is communal rather than individual? So, for example, say you want to spend it on safari, but not for yourself. You want to spend it on safari for the community.
Good. Excellent question. So let me just finish David's question first, and then we'll come to
and
your question.
That sort of ties in with the service, sorry, as well.
Yeah, good question. Okay. So the other part of David's question, what I said so far about the Sefer Torah is based on the Shita of the post, and that say that there's still an obligation for everybody to write a Sefer Torah today. Based on the Rosh, though, it actually might go a little differently. The Rosh basically says, and this is what's paskin in the Shulchan Aruch, at least I think he brings it as a Yesh Omer, and the Achronim there also say that this is the halacha today, that you actually can fulfill, and maybe even today this is the better way to fulfill the obligation, is through buying Sfarim for you to learn on your own. And the main reason for why you should have an obligation to write a Sefer Torah is in order to learn from it. And therefore, today we learn from Sfarim. So for you, you may be able to fill your mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah by writing a Sefer for sure, but even also buying Sfarim also would be included. Based on that, the writing a Sefer Torah today might be a little bit different, because today a Sefer Torah, as Micah mentioned, today a Sefer Torah is usually used for the community, it's not used for personal learning. And therefore today, I would say maybe there's more room to say that you probably certainly could use Miser money to help pay for the cost of a Sefer Torah, because it's not an absolute chiyuv today if it's not used for learning. Now again, I did not see this inside. It could be that there's something in the Sefer that I did not see. But in my discussions, my research, I didn't find it. Here it is. It's here now. Okay, I didn't get to this. This is chapter 14 here. I didn't quite get this far when I was reviewing for the shir. I can tell you what he says in just a second. We'll see if he agrees with me or not. But definitely today there's room to say that you should, that would be allowed. He wants to say the other way, though. He quotes the other way here. Here, I'll read you what he says here. Okay, he says, Imrota likno sefer Torah mimocher. Actually, this is the wrong one. Hold on. Okay, he says that when you're... He quotes here from a number of the Achronim, from the Pre-Hasada, the Netziv, and the Meshiv Dover, and a number of other Achronim, which again, I have apologized, I've not had a chance to take a look at more carefully or see inside. They want to say here... they want to say the way the first way we said it, which is that that you would not be allowed to pay the sofer for reading the Sefer Torah if you use Mos Meiser. But then at the end, he quotes the Shevet Halevi, Rav Vosner, who wants to say, to Kevon Sherabi Alav Chiyuv Lichtov, I'm sorry, no, take that back. Ksiva Sefer Torah Yidei Rabin. That's, that if everybody contributes together to write a Sefer Torah, so most poskim say that you actually have not fulfilled the mitzvah anyway of mitzvah Ksiva Sefer Torah, if you contribute, you know, a couple dollars along with 3,000 other people to write the Sefer Torah. In that case, Rav Vosner wants to say that you can use your Meiser money for that because it's not a direct kiyum anyway with the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah. So today, according to this approach, you would say that Ksiva Sefer Torah is better fulfilled by buying Sfarim in your house rather than writing a Sefer Torah, which I would say, number one, is not necessarily being used for learning anyway, according to that opinion. Number two, you're not fulfilling anyway because you're only paying a certain amount of the money. So according to that, which I think is the case most times today, if you contribute with a lot of other people to write a Sefer Torah, so then according to Rav Vosner, you would be allowed to use that money to use master money for that obligation. Okay, I have to push off other questions for the next couple of minutes. I apologize. Let's look at the scenarios now. In A, do any of these count as master? We have a number of cases here. Kids' school tuition, buying sfarim, my own tuition for learning in yeshiva, shul dues, paying for shiurim, proportion of the taxes that pay for public services. What is the priority of giving? So the last question first. What is the priority of giving? The answer is the priority of giving is basically number one. If you have aniyim in your own family, this is also a halacha based on Hilchos Tzedakah that the Shulchan Aruch discusses in Hilchos Tzedakah based on other Makoros in Chazal. Any family aniyim that you might have, probably you should give them first. Certainly parents and maybe children that are struggling to make ends meet, that would be the first place that you would give your maaser money to. After that, so then already it's a little more lenient. You can certainly give your tzedakah, your maaser for tzedakah money, to, then we say it's other relatives that you might have, then people in your city, then people outside of your city. Ani Eretz Yisrael also is very much up there. We're not going to go into the details now about who to give to first. There's a machlokas about if you live in Chutz Laretz and you have people in your city versus people in Eretz Yisrael, which one do you give to first? That's a machlokas of poskim. I think most poskim say... Say again?
Yerushalayim being a special case.
That's also a machlokas of poskim. I think the Chasam Sofer wanted to say that the Yerushalayim actually has a special status, Lagabi Hilchos Tzedakah, and Rav Rosenzweig and YU wanted to say, I think he wanted to use this Chasam Sofer, or another Chasam Sofer in a similar light that shows that Yerushalayim, even today, Yerushalayim has certain special aspects of Kedusha over the rest of Eretz Yisrael. I think most of the postmen today, bottom line, assume that in your own city, let's say you live in England, in London, let's say, so most postmen would say that you should give Aniyam in London first before you give Aniyam in Eretz Yisrael. But Aniyam in other cities, you would give to after giving to Aniyam in Eretz Yisrael. Again, this is just a very basic outline for Kedima in Tzedakah. But as we mentioned before, when it comes to Maaser Ksafim, the idea of giving to Torah institutions, to yeshivas or seminaries or things like that is also very much up there. And absolutely, if you want to help support a yeshiva or an institution of Torah, that's absolutely, in most situations, you would be allowed to use, and that would be ideal for Maaser money. Let's look at the scenarios again now.
Wait, does that also include using Maaser money to actually pay the salary of the rabbi?
Which rabbi? Okay, let's go through the scenarios first, and then we'll you'll ask your question again, Ziv. obviously, this is very halachah l'maaseh for us, but we'll ask it again at the end. Okay, Number one, for kids' school tuition. So this is a sticky issue because especially in, I don't know about what it is in England, but in America today, tuition prices are they've skyrocketed. They're so expensive. You can basically go bankrupt just trying to pay your kids' yeshiva tuition. Very, very difficult. The bottom line is, it's a machlokas. Most poskim.
Is this just Torah studies or is this secular studies?
Everything. I'll read you a tshuva from Moshe Feinstein in just a minute inside one aspect of this. But generally speaking, the accepted opinion of most poskim, including Rav Moshe and including all these farim here, and I heard this also from Rav Willig and YU, is that tuition, general basic tuition, you cannot use master money for, which again makes things very difficult, unfortunately. But the reason for that is exactly the same thing as we mentioned before. Exactly. Once there's an obligation, you have dues. You must pay the school a certain amount of money for the fact that they are teaching your child.
Exactly.
So,
second. In England, there's actually voluntary contribution system.
You still got the same thing as the Hebrew.
Right.
You could have sent them to public school and sent them to hire a tutor on site.
Interesting. Okay, it's interesting. I think about that. Let's go come back
to
that in a minute. What'd you say?
I would say it's the key of the father to teach their child a profession, and this is part of that.
Okay, let's take both aspects here. Aspect number one, if you have tuition to pay, like you have an obligation from the school to pay a certain amount of tuition, let's say $4,000. Now, halacha is that's a chob. You must pay that money. That is something that every parent has to pay. Okay, yes, some parents might get scholarships, but at the end of the day, that's what you have to pay. And the halacha, according to most poskim, is that you cannot pay tuition using maser money. That's number one. Now, Ray Willig pointed out in a red tab, I think in this book also points this out, if at the end of the day you don't have enough money yourself to pay for your kid's tuition without having too much money left, it could be that at the end of the day you're potter from Masek Sofim. And that'll be the last point that we discuss at the very end, God willing. Hopefully we'll have 2 minutes to discuss that. But that's a very serious possibility, that it could be that you're chayav to give tuition not for Masek money, but at the end of the day, if you have no money left, then maybe you're potter from Masek Sofim bichlal. Okay. But the halacha is that if you're giving maser, you're not supposed to give maser from to tuition money.
Your kid's age have any bearing?
Good question. So, and by the way, I'll just mention that not every single poskim agrees to that. You may find some poskim here and there that will disagree. I seem to remember that the Tzitzel Yezer, they wanted to say it was maybe a little more mekil. Somebody told me, I think it was your wife actually who wanted to say this, that some rabbanim in Brooklyn also are willing to allow certain kinds of yeshiva tuition from maser money, but my impression is that the majority of poskim, and I would have to say logically, I think this makes sense also, is that you cannot do that. However, what we could say is the following. It depends on exactly what the story is. One possible exception, if you have a certain amount of money that you have to pay in tuition, and you choose to pay a little bit more, okay, you voluntarily choose to pay a little bit extra, you give the school an extra donation, but let's say that your child, you want to give your child some extra curricular activity. I don't know. Yes, something basically.
Okay.
Basically, anything that the base tuition does not cover. Okay. Anything extra that the base tuition does not cover that you are voluntarily choosing to. Yeah. It could be even enhancement in terms of learning. It could be, you know, education enhancement, whatever it is. Any of these kinds of cases where you're voluntarily choosing to get them to do more and pay more for it, that already many folks can want to say that maybe that's okay. That's permitted to use for master money because that's not tuition. Meaning tuition, you choose to go to the school, and maybe you have to go to the school, which we'll discuss in just a minute also. Therefore, you have to pay the money. Anything which is extra, or let's say you get a personal tutor, anything like that also, basically, the many posts will say that's okay. I'll just tell you here, Rav Elyashiv, Rabbi Taub quotes in the book here from Rav Elyashiv, that if again, it's an extra tutor, an extra learning, extra seder, he thinks that that's okay.
Is this just having Mother Kurdish?
Yeah, though I would say the same thing is probably true for the Wodichol also.
Including music and football?
And it depends what the case is. If it's something which basically you have to do to be part of the school, then you probably cannot use for master money. If it's something extra which is not necessary, so then again, I would say music, I guess I would say like this. Anything which is not, okay, I take back what I said before. Anything which is not in the Limud HaKodesh, I guess you can't use master money for because it's not included in the purposes we mentioned before, tzedakah or Limud HaTorah. That's what I'm saying.
If you're a
Levi
and you want your child to learn,
say again?
If you're a Levi and
you
want your child to learn,
please put this for a second. Okay. I can hear that maybe. Maybe.
Teaching the person that job is the highest level of tzedakah.
If the person is somebody that would qualify halachically as an ani, then the answer is you're absolutely right.
For your child, too. You have the same obligation to teach your child the job as to teach.
So that would be a reason to say that you dafka should not use maser money for it. No, because you have a chiyuv.
Okay, by paying extra, I mean
the assumption today. The assumption today is that most things that you do in school is sufficient in order to fulfill your obligation for teaching your child Torah and teaching your child a profession. Anything extra than that, anything over and beyond that, we would say is included. So good. So if the reason why you're teaching your child music is so that they become a musician, then I hear what you're saying. Maybe again, I didn't see this exactly. I could,
about,
football?
No,
not football.
Mathematics.
Okay, I can hear that. Again, it depends why you're teaching it to them. If you're teaching it to them, they should be able to, you know, become a great mathematician. That should help in their extra study. So it could be that I could hear that. Again, I didn't see that directly inside, but I could hear that. That might be the same thing. I have to think about it a little more.
I don't understand that story about tuition. What you said, why is it something that you have an obligation? You put something to public school.
So this is getting, now that gets to the second aspect. Okay, the second aspect is that there's an obligation to teach your child Torah. As you mentioned yourself before, every father has an obligation to teach their children Torah. And therefore, if this is the way Bisman has said that you teach your child Torah by sending them to a yeshiva, then you are obligated to do that to fulfill your mitzvah, your chiyuv, and therefore you cannot use maser money in order to do that, unless you're paying them extra.
I could teach him alone.
Yes, but the question is, are you really going to do that? If you really could do that, practically, maybe it's different.
I could, and I think there is for him to do extra. So tuition becomes extra.
No, well, it's another practical application. Boyer is free. Throughout the chayyim, you have to pay for it. Are you saying that the tuition throughout the chayyim?
That's an excellent question.
Well, it's a
I understand. I understand. That's a very, very good question. Again, obviously, these kinds of questions are the questions that don't appear in the books here. I'll give you my ladiyas dati, but I can't say that every posit. I can't say that I've asked anybody or that anybody's going to agree to this. This is the kind of question that'd be nice to run past somebody else. Also, my personal impression would be that there definitely would be poskim that would allow it in that kind of situation. That would allow. What's the reason why? It's the same svara. That your base chiyuv, all you have to do in order to teach them Torah and maybe even a profession, is sent to a school like Brewery, which is basically the regular Mama, the regular school. They teach Torah, then they teach other secular studies. You don't need to do any more. Anything that you do which is extra, in addition to that, would be above and beyond, and therefore, definitely, I would think, Lanias Dati, again, I haven't asked anybody, Lanias Dati, I would definitely think that there is room, Yesh Makam, to allow using master money to pay for an extra school. And I do think, I do seem to remember hearing that maybe now, I remember that somebody, one of the rabbanim here in Yad Vashem also said that, but I can't remember who it was or who told me that, so don't take that.
The difference in the tuition.
Yes, 100%. The difference in tuition. That's what you were asking, right? Yeah, let's spell that out again. Yeah. Anything which is a difference in tuition between the two schools, you probably would be allowed to use master money for. The base chiyuv, you know, the basic school, which is not, I don't know how much is it, 500 shekel a month,
whatever it is.
Actually, it's less than that. No, it's probably less than that. Is not allowed to come from master money. One more question, then we have to go on.
Going back to the Hindu mitzvah thing, because generally the amount that you have to spend on Hindu mitzvah is a third extra, then are we saying that anything above that, even if you did make a stipulation in advance, you would automatically be able to basically use your master? Because it's only the first third that you have the obligation.
Right. Good question. I have to think about it a little bit. The question is whether there would be a difference between the regular type of hiddur mitzvah that we were talking about before when it comes to, you know, an esrog, let's say, as opposed to maybe some of these kinds of situations of teaching your son Torah at a higher level or giving him more hours of limud kodesh. Is that considered to be the same type of hiddur mitzvah as the esrog? And it could be that there's a difference. If you want to say that it's the same thing, then you probably would be correct. That l'chadchila you should try to stipulate when you start, or if you're able to do it, if you didn't realize what the chiyuvim are, or the minhag, whatever we said before, the whole discussion of you didn't realize what the obligation of maser kesefim was, then you would probably want to stipulate that you are allowing yourself to use maser kesefim money to pay for the extra difference in tuition to go to the better school. If you didn't do that, if you accept that, let's say, teaching your son more Torah or going to a better school is like the hiddur mitzvah case, you might have to say that l'chadchila many poskim would say that you should avoid it, but again, not everybody agrees to that. Even in that case, it's not so pashut. That's the preferred approach. But again, I think there might be room to say, and I have to think about this a little bit myself. I think there might be room to say that the hiddur mitzvah when it comes to an esrog might be a different kind of hiddur mitzvah that exists when it comes to choosing which school to send your child to. But again, that needs a little bit more thought. It's a little bit of tzarchi in there, so I'll have to think about it a little more. Okay, good. Let's go on. Okay, that's tuition. Tuition, by the way, is the most complicated one of, I think, of all these scenarios here. That's the one that there's the most ambiguity and discussion about. Two, buying svarim. So most of the poskim say that buying svarim, that you really should not be buying svarim from maestro money. Once upon a time, there are poskim that say this. The Drisha quotes this in Yoredeia, and I think the Taz quotes this, yeah, and Reish Mem Tes as well. A number of other achronim say that it used to be once upon a time that it was very difficult to get svarim, so in that case, maybe you would be allowed to buy svarim using maestro money, and certainly if other people are going to use them as well. But today, svarim are easily available, and usually you use your svarim for yourself and not for anybody else. Therefore, if it's a personal sefer, most poskim say, and this Rebbe Taub quotes, and Rebbe Chaim Kanievsky mentions in the Sefer Derech Emuna, and a number of other achronim as well, say that in this case, that's not ideal to buy svarim using maaser money. If you would use the svarim not only for yourself, but rather to donate to an institution, then the halacha is that most poskim say that's okay. That is, yeah, the Chasam Sofer mentions that, a number of other achronim also mention that.